Hello and welcome to the AIPT Comics Podcast.
Ooh. Episode 145.
The scariest number of them all, Dave. And that's because this episode drops on All Hallows Eve Day morning.
Night. Which is a rare thing, you know. The sure. show is a weekly Sunday show, and we don't have Halloween on Sunday always. No. Although I just saw...
And we don't have Halloween usually.
What do you mean?
Like, it's only one time a year.
Oh. Shouldn't Halloween be the last Saturday of every October, similar to Thanksgiving being the last Thursday?
Yes. I thought you meant it should be every Saturday in October, and I was like, I'm also down for that.
More Halloween, please.
No, and that's kind of the predicament I find myself in, because I like to go hard on Halloween, and I have to work at 5 o'clock in the morning on Monday, so maybe not. Maybe I'll go medium rare to this year. I don't know.
If you love Halloween, you'll love this episode. Scott Snyder joins us to talk about his three new comiXology books, two of which are horror-centric. And we dig a little bit into all three, but also talk about Kraft, his work with his collaborators, the amazing artist Francavilla, Manipul.
Some Capullo. Really cool stuff that's coming out right now and coming up.
And also, I ask him what his favorite Halloween things are from movies, books, and comics.
Yeah. Now, you called him while standing outside his house and said, "What's your favorite scary movie?"
I had a Scream mask on. I actually wear that everywhere now. I don't...
Not Ghostface, but like the old painting, the Scream.
I don't actually have a normal mask to cover my face, so I wear that to the store and whatnot.
Love it.
And no, that's not how it happened. We actually talked over the phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thanks for breaking my illusions. And, by the way, I want to say another cool thing about this episode dropping on October 31st is October 31st is the 3-year anniversary of my first piece published on AIPTComics.com.
Oh my God, congratulations.
I am so happy to be a part of this team and that it's led to me getting to chat comics with you every single week. So I just want to start everything off with a little bit of schmaltziness. Thank you, Dave.
No, thank you. You've done amazing work from the very start. And now you're here with me, chained to a desk to talk.
That's right. Right. Yeah. Comics. Yeah. When you asked me if I wanted to play a game, I didn't think that you would... Like, there is a rusty hacksaw next to my microphone, and I don't know what to do with
What's crazy is I still drugged you, even though I only moved you two rooms away to your office.
It's wild. And in my own home.
And I live in a different state, so I don't even want to explain all this
and
stuff.
And I'm hungover, so, like, you probably didn't even have to drug me.
Do you want to play a game?
Do. Here's my favorite game.
Yeah.
Let's talk comic news.
Oh my God, that's the thing we start with on every week of this show. We talk about the biggest news of the week. And this week, Newsarama Games Radar. I don't know what you call it.
They're under the Games Radar Plus banner, but it's Newsarama. Yeah.
They have news on the paper shortages, but are they paper shortages? I don't know, because if you haven't noticed, the last 2 or 3 weeks, and actually we talked about this a little bit last week, there have been comics delayed seemingly at random, certain titles from certain publishers. I know Bleeding Cool has been reporting a little bit about paper shortages. Well, GamesWriter is saying that there's actually a printer jam that's preventing specifically 70 Marvel titles from being delayed.
Which is wild. I mean, their sources say that it actually isn't due to the paper shortages. Like, that hasn't become quite a problem over here yet. Mm-hmm. Although, there's other publishers that are reporting similar issues. So unless everyone's using the same printer.
Well,
which is entirely possible. We've all been in an office where everyone has to use the same shitty printer.
I know, right? Their ink is low and HP is demanding they get a new cartridge.
He's like, there's no magenta in this issue. Why do I need to reload magenta?
What do you suppose the publishers aren't more open about this? Is it because they don't want to admit mistakes?
No, I don't know that it's so much that as it's just, we went through, the phrase everyone keeps using is unprecedented times. And I mean, like, looking back at the, last year, everything ground to a halt for months. And I think that it's a worry or like a reluctance to like give in to despair just yet. I don't know. That's kind of how I'm approaching most things, where I'm just like, oh, that sucks. Let's see if it stays bad, mm-hmm. and like before I get too upset about it.
That makes sense. Image did come out and say they won't be doing second, third, fourth printings.
Yeah,
but beyond that, I think they're all,
which makes
they're
sense
trying to do their best to get the books out on time.
Yeah.
I know like fans who go to the store once a month, they might not have certain pulls because of these delays. And I'm sure it's right. different across the country too. Like certain states probably have it worse than others.
Well, and luckily most of these are, you know, 1 to 2 week delays.
Right, right.
So it's not, you know, luckily it's not, we're not seeing, you know, the months long delays that led to a bunch of books being canceled mm-hmm. last year.
True. So we'll keep our eyes on that.
For sure.
It'll be interesting, too, from a reviewer standpoint. I was saying this to Pat Ross, editor-in-chief at AIPT. Like, what if we write a review on a book, and in certain parts of the country, like, Venom won't come out for 2 more weeks?
Right.
Like, as a reviewer, you know, you don't want to spoil too much, ever. But if you spoil something, yeah. someone could be mad at you because it's just not fair. They don't get a chance to get to it.
Yeah.
So that's something that's on our mind as far as our reviews on AIPT.
Well, that's been an interesting thing in film journalism over the last year or so, is just like, do you, you know, if you're able to go see a movie, how much of it do you talk about to avoid, you know,
right,
do you want to spoil it for people? And then also on the flip side of things, it's like, oh, some people just can't get to a theater, even if it's their job mm-hmm. to, you know, to review them. Yeah. It's, I don't know, we were talking about this in terms of the podcast, too. Like, I picked a book
yeah.
that was my most anticipated for this week, and it comes out next week now.
Right, right.
So it just, I think there'll be some interesting little micro adjustments as we go.
These publishing issues have made you a liar, and everyone who's listening knows it now.
Yep, yeah. I know I'm on trial here.
Every episode you're on trial. And I'm the judge.
I really am.
I'm the judge. I have a little gavel.
Look at it.
I like that our first news of our Halloween episode is very spooky and scary. The delays yeah. are very scary. Well, next up, another spooky and scary piece of news. Image Comics is publishing a Razor Blades Deluxe hardcover coming out in April yeah. 2022. On the very same day, James Tynion's company, Tiny Onion, released the fifth issue of Razor Blades.
I always forget that's the name of his company, and it delights me every single time.
You know, it's
time.
Funny, if you read his newsletter, I don't know if you, I think it's part of his Substack now, yeah. He's actually doing lots of onion puns in his emails,
Love
and
it.
He said he'd been holding off till now to do it. I guess because he was worried he would scare people away.
Right.
Speaking of scares, though, Razor Blades number 5, really good anthology comic. It's
Excellent.
Also the last issue, which no one yeah. saw coming. Tynan actually says in the intro it's the last for obvious reasons. For instance, that he's doing the Substack and he's got all this new work on his plate. It was a surprise to me because they were giving out subscriptions last summer for this magazine,
right.
which makes you think it's going to be here for the long haul.
Right.
And in the intro, he does say if you had a subscription, like you'll be refunded some money back, but...
Oh, cool. Yeah, he also mentioned that like it's not necessarily like the total end of Razor Blades as an imprint.
Right.
It just may come back in a different form. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a really great opportunity to give lesser known creators, be it artists or writers, a couple pages of a story to tell. And
definitely.
And if you like prose, if you like interviews, it is truly a magazine. It's not just comic stories too.
For sure.
Moving on, Image Comics Skybound, maybe the scariest news of the week, has revealed that LEGO Ninjago Garmadon is coming in April yeah. 2022. That's right, we're getting LEGO comic books.
Yeah, LEGO Ninjago, which is a whole thing I missed out on.
Yeah, there was that movie 2 years ago, a year ago?
Which apparently did really well, and I just have no concept of what it is.
Yeah, I think it's because the toys are catered towards a little bit of a younger audience, right? Like,
yeah.
middle grade.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I have some friends who are LEGO nuts that might be very excited about this. And, it's cool that they're branching out, I guess. Like, I'm not like turning my nose up at it. I don't have a concept of what this is. I feel like an old person.
Yeah, it's funny, right? I guess LEGO is really going hard on their original IP, which Ninjago is. So why not build out that universe?
Yeah.
But so funny.
You keep adding an extra N so that it's Ninjango, like Ninjango, like,
oh,
like
Django. Django. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's making me.
If they make another Ninjango movie, it should be directed by Quentin Tarantino.
There we go. And then, you know, then we'll cross the generation.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll give all the people what they want.
Absolutely.
Also super spooky. Ghost Rider is celebrating his 50th anniversary next year. Marvel announced a year of vengeance, which they didn't really say what that means, but.
Yeah, but we are going to get so much vengeance next year.
Ryan Stegman did some really cool art featuring tons of Ghost Riders. He actually was on Twitter and he said Marvel hired him to draw one Ghost Rider and he accidentally drew like nine. And
I love it. Goof. Yeah, we've got Kushala, we got Ghost Rider 2099, we've got Robbie Reyes, Johnny Blaze, Danny Ketch. Yeah, it's awesome.
Ghost Rider 2099 and Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Rules.
I forgot how many Ghost Riders there were until
and
I saw this art.
And yeah.
Also this week, they announced a new Ghost Rider series is launching in February from Ben Percy and Corey Smith. The art
I'm so excited.
That they've released is by Kyle Nigyu, a cover artist that's going to be doing all the covers for this series. I love that the motorcycle looks like a chainsaw.
Yes. Yeah. Everything about this cover works for me. I think this is just so dope. So many spikes, so many chains. Like, the 90s kid in me is losing his mind.
Percy, in the statement with this news, said that he was a fan of Stephen King, John Carpenter, and Black Sabbath growing up. So clearly he's going to be leading into that more metal, maybe horror elements of this character.
Yeah, every little bit in this press release spoke to me. I'm excited for new Johnny Blaze adventures. It'll be interesting to see if it crosses over with the stuff that they're doing with Kushala now.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, Johnny Blaze has been Ghost Rider in Hell for the longest time now, right? In the main MCU. So geez, I wonder what it would be like to be the King of Hell for a couple years and then become Ghost Rider again. Why couldn't they get Nicolas Cage?
Let's get Johnny on the show.
We'll get Nicolas Cage on the show. Could you imagine if we got Nicolas Cage? I would do a three-hour interview.
A few years in hell, I came out and did Mandy.
Tell us about buying Amazing Fantasy and what that was like.
It costs so much money. I'm behind on the payments for my pyramid coffin, which he has. Oh my God. He is a pyramid mausoleum.
I reviewed the second movie he did, the Ghost Rider movie he did for AIPT.
Oh, sure.
You know, a decade ago, a long time ago. And in my review, I had clips of him being interviewed about the movie. And there's one clip where he talks about a snake god. And it's just insane.
I love him. There was this video that there was an interview about him doing, there was like two different movies in a row where he asked the director, I really want to lose my eye in this. And then they just kept saying no. And then he finally like got to do it in Drive Angry. He's like, I just want to get my eye gouged out. And they're like, okay, fine. Like,
it's amazing.
Like the guy knows what he wants. By the way, listeners, if you're looking for a very fun, spooky treat to watch, Drive Angry.
Oh, yeah.
That movie is terrible, but so much fun, and is basically the Ghost Rider movie we should have gotten.
What was the movie he did? Marcy, was it? Mercy? No.
Mandy,
yes, Mandy. That's a really good one, too.
I love Mandy.
What's the Goblin? Cheddar Goblin?
Cheddar Goblin, yeah. We talked about it on my other show, Silver Linings Playlist.
Yeah, that's definitely a must-watch.
I love that movie.
If you're listening to this at 7 a.m. on Sunday and have nothing to watch tonight, you just got a couple, you know, free recommendations.
Yeah, those are free.
But the rest of the recommendations for the rest of the show will be charging. Sorry.
Yeah, for sure.
Also in the spooky department, Marvel revealed Savage Spider-Man number 1 will be coming this February from Joe Kelly and Gerardo Sandoval. They say it kind of spins out of Nonstop Spider-Man, which is also by Joe Kelly. This came coming out the last year, a little bit slower because of the pandemic, of course. But if you look at the cover art for this, it appears Peter is turning into a furry spider. Is it? Would you say that's correct?
Yeah, he's becoming kind of a spider man.
No hyphen.
I love that. Like Nick Lowe was basically like, "Look, we know we've done Peter turns into a spider monster before, yeah. but like this is the fucked up version. Like he said you're gonna want to put it down between pages to get your breath back, which was like, you know, the kind of hyperbole that made me very excited for Nonstop Spider-Man. And I think Nonstop has mostly held up its end of the bargain.
Oh, totally. That's bonkers. Wild. It's a 5-issue miniseries, so don't expect to drop a ton of coinage on this. Only 5 issues, folks. Right.
But each issue is $45.
And every recommendation from here on in the show, $45.
$45 recommendations.
In our next piece of news, which I would call a recommendation, is excellent.
Yeah.
It's coming out February 2022. But get this. This book has been teased by Marvel for over a year. This one's by Peter Milligan, Laura Allred, and Michael Allred. This is their return to Ecstatic. I was asking you about this
recently. Yeah, yeah. I remember like there were a couple. Oh, no, we were talking about this maybe with comic book couples counseling off air or something. I just remember it coming up recently where I was like, where's that fucking Ecstatics book? I've been waiting for that.
Yeah. So yeah, people excited. Are really excited for this. Is it a miniseries? I forget. They haven't said. So it could be a new ongoing.
Are you eating candy? What are you doing?
This is ice.
Oh, ice. Okay.
Oh. Oh, it's hitting my teeth.
Oh no.
This is a very scary episode.
This episode is terrifying. I don't know I don't know if it's an ongoing or not, but
yeah,
it's launching early 2022. Finally.
If you haven't read Ecstatics, you should. When did that come out? Late 90s.
It's a joy.
Early 2000s.
Yeah. Yeah. Late. Yeah, I think late 90s. Yeah.
Mike Allred hasn't been too busy lately, so it'll be nice to have a return from him. I know he did that amazing David Bowie book that you loved.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I never got around Allreds to reading that one.
Good.
Yeah, totally.
It's good. It's really good.
Another recommendation. Cha-ching! In our next piece of news. Marvel also teased this week that Iron Fist is hanging up his costume, Danny Rand, I mean, and there will be a new Iron Fist. Dun, dun, dun! This one's not so spooky, unless you call Demon spooky, in which case, very spooky.
Yeah.
Because you can see Danny Rand, he's thrown his costume into a trash bin, similar to Spider-Man, and in the edges, you can see these like demon-type characters like lurking.
Yeah.
But they fully on are going to have a new Iron Fist. This one's by Alyssa Wong and Michael YG. This is coming out in February as well. Who do you think Iron Fist is? Yeah.
Ben Reilly.
That's funny. Another clone.
I want an event where it's just Ben Reilly as every hero. Uh-huh. Like, Ben Reilly, the new Daredevil. Ben Reilly's the new Kingpin. Like, I want that.
Oh my God. What if...
Reilly is the Hellfire Gala.
You just scared me. What happens if Peter Parker gets healthy, but Ben is now Spider-Man, so Peter becomes Daredevil? Would that make any sense?
Nope.
Yeah, they're definitely going to do
but
it.
But I'd read it. Sounds great. No, I love this. I love this new suit design, too.
You
know, it's simple. I like the little epaulets on the shoulder. And I don't know. It's a cool pose. I don't know who this kid. And I don't know that we are supposed to know this character already.
Yeah. No, he's a younger character, so he could be somebody that's in the shadows for the longest time. I'm going to guess that it's a character that's like a son of a character, I bet. A son of a villain. That's what it is. I got it. It's it's Mordo's son.
Oh yeah.
I'm putting that on record.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Interesting. All right.
But yeah, no, it's nice to see Iron Fist get his own series again. It's been a bit. There was a miniseries last year. Larry Hama's, miniseries, which was pretty good. It was epic.
Had some fun stuff in it, yeah.
It was like event
level. He writes the hell out of Taskmaster.
Mm, yeah, totally. This is a 5-issue miniseries again. So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
So often with the big two, they'll launch a new series and not say up front that it's a mini. Because if it...
Yeah.
does insanely well, it will just continue on after the 5-issue arc. We've listed off multiple books here. Ghost Rider is ongoing, but Savage Spider-Man isn't.
Okay.
So like they're right up front saying this isn't going to be a long-term series necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah.
But given that they're
Which
constantly...
also makes it an easier buy-in.
Yeah. And they're constantly renumbering these books anyway, so...
Right.
Speaking of renumbering, in our next segment, Standout...
Kapow.
Moment of the week. Totally threw us off there because this is never the second segment.
No.
We talk about our favorite moments in comics. Comics history. dated October 27th.
Ever on this day.
What was your favorite moment of the week?
I am sending it to you right now. My favorite moment of the week was from Darkhold Blade number one by Dan Kimmelsmith and Federico Sabatini. There's this moment where, so Amadeus Cho and a group calling themselves the Last Avengers, which is the Prowlers, Citizen V, and Silver Sable, are making a, oh gosh, I just had a pop-up ad start playing.
Oh, weird.
On comicbook.com. Thanks, guys.
Bastards.
And as I'm speaking, I'm realizing that Silver Sable was still fighting the vampires because Silver, which is great. they're making their way up the Kingpin's high-rise building, and Blade just straight up takes the elevator. Mm. And when it opens, the elevator goes boop. And the person standing guard goes, "Who is it now?" And Blade steps out of the elevator holding a severed hand and just says, "Boop." Which is just delighted me to no end. Like, that, why would he do that?
That's great.
why would he do an impression of the elevator just like fuck with somebody?
Right. Yeah, that's a cool moment. And the art's really cool.
And right
too.
Before he kills this vampire off screen, but they go, honestly, this is probably the coolest thing that could have ended up happening to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Definitely a standout moment for sure.
Absolutely.
My standout moment comes from Sword number 9 by Al Ewing and Jacopo Comagni. This is a surprising fight comic. I didn't expect it to have that element. It introduces a super villain team called the New Lethal Legion. And it features a bunch of characters I'm pretty sure are completely brand new. One of which is he has the ability to create spikes in his arms, in his arm. And I'm going to send you the panel right now.
Okay.
There's tons of crazy kills in this book. But in this one, the dude sticks his whole fist in a
Holy
character's
shit.
Mouth and then releases the spikes.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you see this schlunk, but it's like also like almost like a tree trunk, the rings of a tree trunk in the schlunk. And
yeah,
spikes are coming out of the head. Do you remember back when like, who was it? A Bullseye killed Elektra and stabbed her through, and it was like a big controversy.
Yeah,
apparently that doesn't
matter
anymore.
You see it in the clothes. Yeah, things have changed. I mean, was it last week you had the guy getting ripped in half in Wolverine?
Oh yeah. Oh was it Wolverine, or were you thinking of Carnage when Carnage ripped that dude?
That's what it was.
That
yes.
was wild.
Yeah.
It's just crazy violence. This issue has tons of crazy kills like this.
Yeah.
And you know, you can totally get away with it now that, you know, mutants can be resurrected on a whim, and this book introduces some villains that can all be murdered and it doesn't matter. So yeah, those are our two favorite moments of the week. Violence good,
man.
Attitude
Wild stuff.
Good.
Vampires being funny.
Hell yeah. In our next segment, our top books of the week. We're going to talk about our top two favorite comics this week. Or are we?
Yeah.
No, we are. We are.
Yeah, I think
so. Our second favorite book of the week. That's right.
Ours.
The Royal Hour.
This belongs to us.
Is The Harbinger number one by Jackson Lanzig, Colin Kelly, and Robbie Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So we had, full disclosure, we had Lanzig and Kelly on, gosh, a month and a half ago?
Something like that,
yeah. And we talked all about The Harbinger, amongst other things, like their book Kang, but we really dug this issue.
Yeah, man, it's a fun, like, it's a really interesting way to kickstart this series again, because I don't have a huge attachment to Harbinger like I do other Valiant characters, and I think this issue does a really good job of kind of reintroducing elements of the previous shows, or the previous runs, rather, while also giving you new mysteries, new threats, and some of the wildest action I've seen in a while. Mm. There's some like Akira-esque psychokinetic stuff happening in this. I mean, that first segment alone where he wakes up and kind of does like a little like hero pose as like a flag wraps around him. Mm. And then he runs up the side of a building, and the metal on the building starts to tear itself away to form shoes for him, yeah, so that he can keep running. And it's all done like without really like pointing out that it's happening. It's just the visuals in this book are worth a second and third read alone, just to pick up on little details.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The whole like vibe of it is like this graffiti futuristic style. That's just really rad. And you're right. It's never too overt with its like, what are his powers? And although there is a moment where he explains some things to somebody, but there's also a voice in his head that's never really explained that adds another layer to things.
Yeah, which I think will make a lot more sense in the next issue.
Yeah,
I've been waiting since we got the preview copy to find out what all that's about.
Right.
And it was funny because like we read this, and then I think like a day later the Batman Beyond news came out.
Oh, so yeah.
Like that they were writing Urban Legends, and now that we know that he's Neo Year, like that whole run is coming up. This book also, I think, is like a really great taster for what they can do with a dystopian city. So anybody who's curious about what their Beyond book is going to be like should check this out too, I think.
I'm feeling pretty confident Lansing and Kelling are going to be a huge powerhouse of creators in comics very soon.
Yeah. It's so fun. Like, go, if you guys haven't heard that interview, like, go back and give it a listen. Like, they get into their creative process and breaking out stories together, and it's really interesting to see, because they're like a true duo. They really balance each other out and find different things that are interesting in different aspects of storytelling. And I think that they bring out the best in each other. Then this book is just firing on all cylinders right from the beginning.
Would you say that you and I are the Lansing and Kelly of podcasting?
I said, yeah, I've always said that. Those were my first words.
When you were born?
Yeah,
oh my God.
When I was born, I came out clean, and I
just said, came out clean. That's good.
One day, David Brooke and I will be the Lansing and Kelly of podcasts.
That's a really good start to a horror movie.
Yeah, and my dad said, put it back.
Put it back! It's evil! The priest in the room, because there's always a priest in the room during a birth, right?
Always.
Started like pointing, like splashing you with holy water.
Yeah.
It didn't sting, though.
Like, delicious.
Yeah, you love that shit.
I love it.
That's our second favorite book of the week. But Nathan,
my co-host on Silver Linings playlist once drank out of the communion water.
Oh my God.
Because he was invited to mass by some friends and didn't realize what it was.
What? Oh my God, did he get sick?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. All I know is I'm just like, who invites someone to mass?
That's
like, that's
true.
Your first thing.
Yeah, that's a weird first date. But Nathan, what is your favorite book of the week?
My favorite book of the week was Razor Blades, the horror magazine, #5, edited and curated by James Tynan IV and Steve Fox, featuring stories by James Tynan, Ezra Clayton Daniels, Steve Orlando, Ian McEwan, Zach Thompson. There's so much incredible work on display in this issue. There's also some great essays. There's an essay by Trevor Henderson, who created the creepy pasta character Siren Head, and talking about the origins of the character and how it's kind of taken on a life of its own, and other people have made it even scarier. And the thing that I love about this series, and this issue in particular had some really great ones, is some of the stories don't even necessarily have to be stories. There's little moments or vignettes, or one is like, you know, a guy sees a woman stumble out into the road and she turns into glass, you know, and that's the story, is he's just telling you about a nightmare that he had. You know, they don't always have to have, a lot of them have like dream, like operate on dream logic, or they're just an unsettling illustration. There's an illustration by Shintaro Kago that like fucking terrified me.
Is that
the
one where it's like ooze out of the eyes and stuff?
Yeah. It's super colorful, and it's like if Dr. Seuss had a bad acid trip and decided to shoot a horror.
It reminded me of like Play-Doh coming out of those toy sets. You know?
Yes. Yeah. This issue, there's a number of moments that stood out to me that just like sincerely got under my skin, and I can't wait to pick up that hardcover. Can't wait for whatever form Razor Blades takes next.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit sad that it's ending, but sure. It's worth noting. You can pick it up right now on therazorblades.com. You can get a digital copy and you pay what you want, or you can get a hard copy too through that same website link.
And it's like they're going out on top. Like that's the other thing is like I don't think that there's been a bad issue of Razor Blades. I might not connect with every story, but there's always just like top tier talent on display in each issue. And you know, they started strong and they're ending strong. I think that's great.
Yeah, it's totally awesome. Yeah, and you're right. I'm curious to see what happens next because Tynan said it's not over, and there are projects kind of spinning out of it too. So. We'll wait and see.
Alvaro Martinez Bueno does the cover art, and it is haunting. I love this cover.
It's
and
so
I wish
gross.
If I had seen this cover last week, it would have been my pick.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. It's really creepy and just disgusting. Don't carpool, guys. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Get out of the car.
My favorite book of the week wasn't so spooky. Star Wars: War of the Bounty Hunters, IG-88 number one by Roddy Barnes and Guia Villanova. Did not expect this one to be my favorite book. War of the Bounty Hunters, the event has already wrapped up. This is a one shot, extra sized one shot featuring IG-88, of course. Do you think people call him IG-88?
Iggy. Yeah, that's what I call him.
Is it true IG-88 was based off Iggy Pop?
Yes, that is true.
Bad joke. Actually. Bad joke.
All the bounty hunters that work with him are called the Stooges.
That's hilarious. Someone should do a spoof on that.
I love it.
So this book is really, really well written. If you haven't been catching up on IG-88 in the Marvel Comics universe, it does that in the first few pages. Last we saw him, he was fighting Darth Vader and he lost. So the first half of this book is narrated by a junker mechanic guy who idolizes IG-88. He practically thinks IG-88 is like a god. He puts it on himself to rebuild IG-88. The second half of the book is IG-88 interacting with Boba Fett, which is how this story ties into War of the Bounty Hunters, but then also kind of leading us on to where he goes from here. And also he's going to be showing up in that Crimson Dawn book that's coming out soon by Charles Soule. So
yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
It basically picks up the pieces of where IG-88 was and brings us to where he'll be. But the narratively speaking, the story here is so well done. You get inside IG-88's head in the second half. Villanova's art, it humanizes him just enough so that, you know, this is a character that, if you've ever read an IG-88 story, typically is very much happy to be a robot and not flesh. But also he sees the problem with being just a robot. He sees how Sith wizards can defeat him because there's no way to calculate for Jedi powers or Sith powers. But he's also desiring to be the greatest bounty hunter ever and to always accomplish his goals. And there's this fantastic moment where Boba Fett actually speaks to him and is like, that's something a droid should say or something like that.
To have aspirations.
Yeah. But also, this issue is fantastic because of the way it tells the story with the mechanic and then how it all turns and then goes to IG-88. I don't want to spoil what happens, but it's a bit of a shock. Okay. And it's really cool to see.
Yeah, I was very surprised. You messaged me
the
other day and you were just like, man, IG-88 rules. And I was like, really? Okay. Like, I can't... I'll give it a read this weekend.
I honestly don't read all the Star Wars books every week religiously.
Same,
in part because... I
there's just a lot.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's Darth Vader, there's Dr. Aphra, the Star Wars, then there was this event. And then there's also a Bounty Hunters book. And the quality sometimes shifts or I lose interest in the arcs. So this is a great way to just get some Marvel Star Wars in your blood because it is a one-shot too.
Yeah.
So check that out. $45 for that recommendation. And our next segment, top books for next week. We're going to talk about our top, most anticipated, favoritest comic ever out.
Can't wait in the future.
November 3rd. We both picked the same book.
Yeah.
It's called The Human.
Human.
Wait.
Target.
Oh, yes, that's right. Target.
Number one.
I was going to say Hawkeye. I don't know why.
I said that like IG-88 for some reason.
It's by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. I was lucky enough to read this, like a month and a half ago. So
I know, it's killing me. I'm very excited for this. I love this character. Christopher Chance is always a fun character to revisit. And I love the very kind of pop styling that they're going with this book. But I also, I wasn't huge on Strange Adventures. I know you really enjoyed it, and I didn't like Rorschach at all.
Yeah.
So the whole vibe they're going for with this one, it has me very interested, and the characters they're using has me interested. So I'm definitely, and I'm always a sucker for a noir story.
Yeah, and this is a 12 issue series. Smallwood's doing all the main covers. Smallwood is a freaking genius. Smallwood has done a lot of like one-shot stories, like randomly, mostly with Marvel the last couple of years, like a random, Savage Avengers here or there. So it's cool to see Smallwood doing an entire series, by himself. And he's also coloring the book as well. And it's just visual storytelling is peak right here. It's just something else. It's like a work of art. It's insane. I think everyone should probably pick this up. I mean, you don't have to know these characters that well. Although I will say Tom King does reach into the basket of random Justice League Society characters you may never have heard of.
Yeah, I love
it. But that's okay. You know, it's not okay. We only have two more segments left of the show.
No.
I know. I just want to stay here forever and get snuggles in the Halloweens.
And be scary.
In our next segment, judging by the cover, Junior, we're going to talk about our most anticipated, favoritest cover out next week. And we are certain these are coming out. We are 100% on this one.
I hope so.
Because last week I had to pivot at the last second.
Yeah, and then I ended up stealing your cover. I didn't even realize it.
You know, I always knew you had aspirations to be a pirate, but today was, you know, we got the answer.
Yar.
You gotta dodge a ball, you gotta dodge a wrench. My favorite cover of the week is the Silver Coin number 6 by James Herron. I believe this is a variant cover. It features a very scary boy, B-O-I.
Yeah.
It looks like sort of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre vibe, but he's massive with a tiny little head and a tiny little mask. And he's got one of those like bandsaw things that are usually like used on a table, but not in the air with blood splatter.
He's holding it. Yeah.
It's a dude with a...
That's wild.
With a... what is that? A scythe? Is that what you call it?
Scythe.
I say scythe. And he's got...
You're wrong.
He's got a crow-like... body armor kind of thing with bones. Yeah. It's really cool.
That's so cool.
I've had my eyes on this cover for months and months and months since it was solicited. So it was an easy pick for me. If you go to aiptcomics.com, you can see the cover in full.
And very appropriate for Halloween.
It is. It sure is. What is your favorite cover?
My favorite was Superman 78, number 3, variant cover by Lee Weeks. It's just this gorgeous shot of Clark hovering over the Daily Planet. Lois is sitting on the sign around the
globe. That seems dangerous.
It seems impossibly dangerous. And I don't know if he flew her up there and sat her down so that then he could fly up and be cute. But whatever he did, I love
it. She's shitting bricks, pissed off.
She's like, I don't want to, my shoes are about to fall off.
Oh, that's true.
But she wants him to lay, but she's reaching out her hand and he's extending a hand to take her flying. And man, I am a sucker for a Superman takes Lois flying scene, especially in the context of Superman 78. This is just lovely.
It really is.
And I love the foggy background. The birds are flying just underneath his feet. The wisp of the cape is just lovely. Everything about this cover is just gorgeous.
It's amazing how it really looks like he's floating, like he's weightless, which makes it almost magical in a way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like his legs are like almost like hanging, you know what I mean? Like he's not perched or anything. It's a great pose.
That's a good question. If Superman's sitting on the edge of a building, can he make his feet dangle or do they just start floating away from him? Wait a minute. Another question.
He starts folding up like he's in a hide-a-bed.
Can he make one leg fly and the other leg not fly and let gravity take it?
I don't know.
Could he just like flop around like one of those automobile ad, you know, inflatable men.
Is it too late to ask Scott so we can edit it into the interview?
Answer, Scott, answer. He'll be like, I'm not paid by DC. I have no answer. Yeah, this is a fantastic cover. Lee Weeks is so good in this.
Gorgeous.
This, I think, is his, I saw him on Twitter saying it's his first like exclusive his cover that is signed or something.
Wow.
He's been around the block, so it's cool to see that too. Well, that's it for Judging by the Cover, Junior. In our next segment, join us as we speak to Scott Snyder about his books Clear, We Have Demons, and The Night of the Ghoul, three new Comixology books out this month. We talk about the future, Halloween, and more frights. So on with us is Scott Snyder. Scott, you've had an incredible month with Comixology, three different titles, all in this first month. Thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast.
No, dude, it's a pleasure. I love being on this one, David. I feel like it's coming home. I've been on enough that it's something I really look forward to and feel comfortable doing and excited to do.
Zach Thompson was on 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he's trying to catch up to you, but I told him you were booked later in the month. He was like, damn.
Never. I'm just going to keep releasing books and coming back nonstop to the record.
Well, speaking of releasing books, you've got Clear, Night of the Ghoul, We Have Demons, all this month. What made three of these titles out of the eight coming out this month the right titles to put out?
Well, I wanted to really sort of show a range, and these were the books that I had been working on the longest. So it's almost like they were the furthest underway. They were the projects that I thought showed what the whole line was about. Mm. So We Have Demons, for me, is a book that kind of leans into all the stuff that everyone expects from me and Greg, but does it on our own terms in a bigger, like brass, like kind of more brash, bombastic way than we've ever tried before. So that one kind of leans into expectations. Clear is a book that's really urgent. You know, it's about, in case anyone's not reading it, it's about a near future where everyone connects to the internet neurologically. And the big fad or the thing everybody does is to just skin the world or filter it with these thing called veils to look however they want. So the superstructure is still there, but like if you want to look out and see like manga style, everything it is, or a different history for the United States, everything looks that way. And so everyone lives in kind of their own subjective chosen reality. And I've never done sci-fi. I've never done, you know, that kind of sci-fi noir or speculative sci-fi really. A little bit on the wake, but nothing like this. And Francis, you know, hasn't done a creator-owned book ever and really wanted to do something that would allow him to flex his muscles. And he loves sci-fi as well. So it was one of those things where it was like, let's do something we've never done with the second book. And then the third book is, you know, Francesco Francavilla. It's horror. It's Night of the Ghoul. The fun of it is trying something visually and narratively experimental. So it's a book about a guy who finds the remnants of what's supposed to be the greatest horror movie of all time from the 1930s, but was lost in a deadly studio fire. And it's him trying to get to the bottom of the mystery of this film, interviewing the guy who's still alive, who is the writer-director, in this rest home in the California desert. And it intercuts between that claustrophobic kind of night in this rest home that gets scarier and scarier and the original film pieces that Francesco is doing in black and white. So it has this double helix structure. And, you know, so for me, these three books kind of represent the breadth, the range, the priorities and sensibilities of the line. And what I love about them also, and then I'll stop, is just each one was really created organically with my partner. And that's true of all the books. But I think with these, it was a very obvious thing from once you open any of them. You know, I went to Greg for We Have Demons, which is about a young girl who discovers that her father, who she thinks is this kind of like sleepy town sort of ne'er-do-well pastor, was actually like the Indiana Jones in this demon hunting organization that spans like generations around the world. That book, I went to him and I'm like, look, I have this idea about something I want to write for my teenage kid. You've got teenage kids that would be, you know, for adults, but would be a message about how parents wish they could hand their kids a better world right now. And it'll feel like, you know, a Saturday morning cartoon R-rated, you know, this big kind of crazy burrito of like gore and action and fun, but it'll have this heart. And he's like, well, what are you thinking? And I'm like, I think I have this idea for a new take on demons in this. He's like, I have an idea for a character. And we went like that. And
oh, cool.
Same thing with Francis. It was like, you know, what are your fears? He was visiting with his wife and kid. And it was like, what are your fears? We were talking about our fears one night over a drink for our kids. And we were both talking about how we're scared of the fact that our kids are being raised in an environment where they're facing kind of more, you know, challenging circumstances than ever before when it comes to divisiveness and the economy and all this stuff. And yet every thing they encounter algorithmically, whether it's search engines or the way they listen to music or TV or movies, pushes them more and more into a hole of things they already like. You know, it's like, you like this? Well, more of that. News, information, all of it. So we wanted to create a world that we both felt was built from the DNA of our fears, our, you know, hopes for our kids. And same with Francesco. It was really like, that was in 2016 when the world was kind of going crazy and going to hell in a handbasket suddenly. We both kind of went back and fell back in love with classic monsters. We were both doing this rewatch of like Universal monster movies just to get our heads out of things. And I saw him drawing some of them and saying he was doing that too. And I was like, oh man, we should make a new classic monster, but one that kind of embodies a lot of fears today. And it was like, oh, let's do it. So my point is simply that the reason I did these three books first is that I feel like they embody all the priorities of Best Jacket, where it's like, you know, do something that's totally collaborative, that's co-owned, that's built from the ground up together, and that pushes you in a direction that you haven't tried before. So, yeah, I'm crazy proud of them, and I can't thank people enough for picking them up. Like, the early sort of metric on how they've done is way better than I'd ever hoped, and I'm really grateful.
I was blown away by Clear. I think I gave it a 10 out of 10 in my review. Speaking of, you know, I've been reading and reviewing your books for 10 years, and I have to say, like, this feels like a new era for you. Like, you've elevated your game, and I didn't know you had another gear you could even go to based on some of your most amazing work in the last 10 years. So I've just been incredibly impressed, and it makes sense. If you're bringing in your collaborators even more tightly into the story, it becomes something even more new and nuanced, I would assume.
Yeah, that was the best lesson I ever learned in comics. And by the way, dude, I mean, I know we talk on this podcast, but that it means a lot to me. Like, you know, the fact that you like the book that much, but also just, I appreciate what you do and what AIPT does. And the fact that, you know, you guys are out there being honest with creators all the time and saying, this could be better, this is something we liked, all of it. And we always appreciate it. And it does mean a lot. But the,
oh, thanks.
You know, with this, sincerely, like, the best lesson I ever learned was on Batman with Greg, where we hated each other when we started because, like, I wanted to do a full script. He wanted Marvel style. And what I came around to slowly kind of accepting is that the best things you're ever going to do in comics are going to be the ones where you give your collaborator the room to shine, even at the expense sometimes of your own comfort. And for me, that's what this whole line is, where it's like, every book, you wouldn't recognize one script format to the next, where it's me talking to Tula, how do you like to work? She's like, let's get on the phone, let's walk it through, and then you can do a loose outline, and I'll do some sketches, and then I'll go from there. Great, let's do it. You know, meanwhile, Jock is like very tight, he likes the full thing. So, you know, everyone is different, and the fun of it, and the reason I believe genuinely it's like my best work is because it's the work that I feel like I stepped off the most and let everybody else kind of shine. And having partners who are just such great visual storytellers, and, you know, just getting out of their way is half the battle. And I'm so happy with these and the ones coming. I mean, from Canary and Duck and Cover and all of them, you know, we have a whole year and a half lineup of stuff that I can't wait for people to see.
Working with Comixology and, you know, in this new way, do you feel like you can break the rules in some way as far as your approach to scripting and you know, like, for instance, we have Demons, you have a lot of prose to start the book, and you have the prose on the left and the imagery on the right, which reminded me of a lot about when Spawn uses that narrative sort of to show the newscasters, for instance.
Yes.
Is there a name for that, by the way? Because I asked everybody.
I don't know. It was funny because I was teasing Greg about, like, look, I'm turning into Todd. Like, you know, like, you're stuck with me all over again. But the I do feel like creatively really liberated by some of the freedom that digital affords. I mean, we're not caught on certain page turns. I can add a page, subtract a page. There's also like a level of visual experimentation that the artists are trying, where, for example, on Clear, the book in print is going to be quite different, where Francis did a bunch of pages really specifically for digital because he's fascinated by the way that a guided reader will, in a longer panel, will actually scroll you across the panel. So he loves the experiential aspect of digital and then wanted to redo a bunch of pages for print to make it more print, a reading experience. So our goal with the Comixology And I really hope this is clear to people, because it's probably the most important thing for me as to why we made the deal to do all these books this way, is that as much as I'll always have a foot in the direct market and love it, I've Noctera, I've Undiscovered Country, you know, a bunch of stuff coming too. I really, with the pandemic hitting, I wanted to be a part of something that I believed in, that I thought would help strengthen some of the kind of founding mechanisms in the industry that I feel like are faulty, you know. And I think digital and print being held competitively for so long, where it's a choice, like, do I want to get the exact same comic digitally on the same day for the same price, or do I want to get it in print? When stores were closed, I started shopping digitally all the time.
Right.
And you know, you can always get your books in the mail. Even when I was a kid, I had a subscription, but the first thing I did when we moved out to this place, when I was depressed and didn't know anybody, was find a comic store. And so what I'm trying to say is, I believe watching my kids, the way they love going to the comic store, and they basically read everything digital, then go to the store, buy manga, buy trades, buy single issues of things that are the new books by the people they loved that they read digitally before. The store is a nexus and like a nerve center for geek culture and for comics. It will exist as long as there are amazing stories and things coming out in print that are special, you know? So for me, the idea that we're giving people an affordable way to browse all of our comics in these tough times, so that then they can go out and buy them in a different format and from Dark Horse, you know, in 6 months, I felt like it was the most responsible way of doing it. And I believe in what it, as much as I know it could be controversial to some people, I believe in the fact that I think it will strengthen the industry. If we start moving towards a healthier relationship between subscription-based browsing and print collectability. And I think it'll make things a lot better, you know, moving in that way, so that we don't have a glutted, speculator-driven direct market a lot of the time.
Right.
Especially when paper shortages and supply chain issues are ramping up, and there's distributor issues as well. So, you know, that's like not to get too like inside baseball or like, you know, boring people with like just talking the business aspects of it. But it was important to me. You know, when they said we made a deal with Dark Horse so that, you know, we can put all our books out in print, and we're going to do it in a way where you get to decide how different books are published with us, so that some books, like We Have Demons or other books, we may be able to do, or we are able to do single issue with variant covers, all kinds of stuff, which they haven't done before.
Right.
Meanwhile, other books that would fit the direct market better as trades, because they'd be harder sell in the direct market for retailers, we'll do with special trades, you know? So all of it is an attempt to be like, how do we do awesome digital comics that embrace that medium and allow you to get everything we're doing for the price of one comic a month with a subscription to Comixology Unlimited, and discover 40 to 50,000 other titles they have on Unlimited, from Saga to Batman Year One to new original stuff they're putting out all the time. So you fall in love with comics all over again for the price of one comic a month, and then you go to your store and love it and like buy the stuff that you want on your shelf.
You know? It's almost like you're creating a new routine in a way, right? Like you go to Comixology first and then expecting a really cool collection of all those stories later on.
Yeah, or even the single issues. I mean, one of the things for me is, you know, what we're moving towards, I think, and I think it's a moment where you're going to see creators lean into this a lot with their own social media, whether it's people doing stuff through Substack or doing stuff just by changing the way that they're operating from their social media hubs, I think, and their like pages, their profile pages and stuff, is that you're going to see people offering collectible, cool stuff that you can get in stores if you order it through their site, and that stuff that they'll either ship to the stores or ship to you, but mostly through the stores, where a lot of creators I know are working in those models right now. Mm-hmm. And they'll have a way for you to browse their comics, you know, cheaply. And so I think a lot of it is like, you browse, you find who you love, and then, you know, I'll be there because I fell in love with somebody digitally to buy the first issue of their new series in the store because I want the physical and I want it signed, or I want to go to a con later, or I want to have it just because it's the first appearance of a character that I know is going to be special. So I think people want to get in on the ground floor and they want things experiential. And in this cult, I think the pandemic drove them back to like their favorite hobbies in a way that has been a big boom for comics. And I think we should take advantage of it by, you know, giving them easier access to the whole world of comics, cheaper access to the whole world of comics, and then encouraging them to be like, and now the best part is you go to a store and you find other people who love what you do, whether it's a giant Newbery Comics at the mall, like my kids go to when they're there, or Fourth World, you know, our local shop, which they love going to for other reasons, you know, all the time.
Right, right. Speaking of inside baseball, though, you know, after we've just accomplished Scottober,
which I know
was hilarious.
There's still 3 days left.
That's yeah. true. That's true. Was there some sort of strategy in releasing three titles in 1 month and not like necessarily spreading it out even further?
Yeah, I mean, they talked about spreading it out further, but my belief was, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the best way to prove the point of everything, of like our commitment to it, the range of the books, the quality of the books, but also the desire for people to get a subscription so that they would be able to explore books by other people as well, from, again, like classics, Swamp Thing, to brand new creators that were my students. You know, I have tons of people on there that are emergent creators, and I think Comixology has done a really good job of supporting new talent coming in with their originals line. The idea was to say, for the price of one book, you get all three every month. Mm-hmm. So I wanted you to feel like you weren't just getting a bargain, but if you have a subscription, you're getting Demons, Clear, Wheat, Night of the Ghoul for the price of one book every month, plus access to all these other ones, plus, you know, all kinds of other great stuff. And then the idea is that when this wave ends in March and April, we're going to start the next wave of books. So you'll always have multiple books from Best Jacket coming out in digital in waves. And that way the whole fun is with a subscription, you're always getting a good bargain. Now, does that make the most sense financially for me and my partners?
Yeah,
probably not, you know, and that's okay with me and with them. I've talked to them about it. I think we believe in what we're doing. If I was trying to shill for it, I'd probably be like, don't get a subscription, buy a single issue of each one.
Sure.
But I really want, I want people to dive back into comics in a big way. And I think ultimately that will do a lot better for all of us, me included, and my co-creators, than trying to just sell our own stuff.
Scott, I felt like the three books you released this month were all catered to me in that. And I'm a very selfish person, but no, you know, I went to school for screenwriting, so I'm a movie buff. I'm a huge noir fan. And the third one, I love creation myths. And I think you hit all three of those, specifically with We Have Demons. You sort of recontextualize faith there. And I'm curious, this isn't the first time you've done a creation myth by any means. Is there, do you have like a specific interest in creating creation myths? And if so, why?
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think what it is for me, I like the idea of being religious. I'm not particularly religious. I wasn't raised to be, but as I've gotten older, it's something that, you know, we encourage our kids to explore without, you know, pressuring them to be anything. You know, my family is Jewish. My wife's family is Catholic. And so we're all over the place. But what I love about the idea of spirituality is its humility.
For me, that stretches across many different disciplines. So for example, I love the idea of studying astronomy as a kind of spiritual endeavor. Anything that makes you feel small and connected to a story that's kind of overarching and bigger than your own comprehension, but makes you feel part of something grand, to me is faith, you know, and what I love about We Have Demons and its approach to that, and American Vampire had notes of this, and Metal and Death Metal had a lot of notes of this too, is it's the deep belief that the only way we're going to make it through things is to understand that we're all part of the same story. And that story might be mysterious, it might be bigger than us, but that somehow accepting or having faith in other people as essential to the big experiment, that you have to trust and love, you know, people that you might not gravitate towards normally, you know, in a kind of a familiar way, But that's the joy of things. It's discovering how connected we all are, even when our backgrounds, our interests, our passions, our views are different, that we're all stuck on the rock together that way. And understanding the tininess of your own life is also understanding the largeness, I think, of the human project that way. So I love stories that do that. And, you know, everything we're doing, whether it's, you know, the opposite of that is the fear expressed in Clear, you know, and the ghoul, when you learn more about what the monster really is the same, has a lot of the same kind of, a lot of the same anxieties baked into its scariness. So yeah, it's definitely something that's been on my mind in different ways for a while, but doing a story that's openly about faith that way, as Noctera is as well. I mean, Noctera is a different take. Noctera is a belief that faith isn't sort of wanting things to stay the same or go back to how they were before, but the effort to bring something better about, even if you don't get to see that thing. So it has, again, notes of angels and demons. So yeah, I don't know if I'm just, as a dad or as I get older, I kind of gravitate more towards these religious themes, but I think it's the desire to feel part of something larger than oneself. And also remembering that to do that it's crucial to feel small, you know, and religion shouldn't be something, in my opinion, that makes you feel self-important or makes you feel right. It makes you feel other people are wrong in some way, you know, right, but right. Faith should
togetherness.
Be togetherness. Togetherness. Yes. Thank you.
It's funny. I was just thinking that someday someone should write a book about you through the lens of what you were writing at the time of your life. Cause I was just thinking, like, you know, you were working on Superman Unchained, which you talked about a little bit in mm-hmm. Your workshops or what would you call it? Workshops? I guess you'd call it workshops.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. The class. Yeah.
And, that was fascinating. I think everybody should sign up for your Substack. It's some really cool Thanks. Stuff in there. I was just wrapping up the, your analysis of Venom, yesterday.
Oh, thanks.
Which was really cool.
Yeah. I love doing it. I love teaching, but yeah, like to speak to what you just said, I think one of the things that I try and teach in class is that you have to put a lot of your own hopes and fears in whatever it is you're writing, whether you cloak them in kind of comic book lunacy or you lay them bare. And you can go through my stuff, I hope, at different times and see, I was worried or thinking about this, parenthood. That's right across death of the family, which is, you know, the Wake has a lot of that kind of generational aspect in it too. There, that period is very much about like parenthood. And then, you know, this period is about human nature. And I think the power of fictions to hold people together or completely tear them apart.
Right. We Have Demons was the, I don't know if you'd call it a trigger warning, but there was the opening page. I was a little surprised to see it. And I was, because I've never seen it. You do something like that before where you kind of give a warning about faith. Was that always in the cards? Did that come later when you were kind of finishing?
It came later. Yeah. Actually, I was going to start more conventionally and it just felt too easy. It felt like, and I wanted to do something that framed the book in such a way that played on kind of your expectations about religious iconography. And that's why it starts like hark, almost like a scroll, you know, but then kind of undercuts that and becomes less reverent and more character driven. So I wanted to almost be like, what you think this book about is about, you know, Greg and me doing demons and it will be about that, but it's also about something that might make you uncomfortable. And that was the joke. It's like, you're not going to be uncomfortable by demons' faces being ripped off or whatever, but maybe you will be by the fact that it's a book that does ask you to believe in something larger than yourself.
Two of your books are penciled and colored by one person, Manipul and Francavilla. Do you find the work comes out differently when you have the colorist also be the pencil artist?
Yeah, I mean, I think when people want to do that, it really adds a visionary kind of layer to it. And there's so much more, I think, almost like just cohesion. And the dissonance sometimes with a colorist or the contrast or the, you know, the complementary aspect can be amazing when you bring somebody else on, like Dave McKeag, who, you know, is doing We Have Demons and working me on American Vampire. But Dan Panosian is also coloring his own work for one of the first times. And so is Tula Lotte, Lisa, is also doing that. And Jock is doing the designs and color for his own stuff on this one as well. So really almost like, yeah, I guess 5 out of the 8 people are doing their own,
That's fascinating. Coloring. That's really cool.
Yeah, I know. And I love it. I mean, it adds a kind of control for them. And I think it really the work, like from Francis is so different than anything you've seen from him before. And Francesco as well. I mean, he's done it before, colored himself, but with this, the palette is so strikingly different. It's giving him all these things to play with. So the goal again with Best Jacket really is to give co-creators the room to explore and kind of explode on the page. And, you know, if somebody said they wanted to do that, we did it. And if somebody wanted a certain inker, we got that inker or colorist. So I want, yeah, partners to be really happy.
I have to ask, was there a specific movie or director that helped inspire Night of the Ghoul? I know you said you were watching the Universal movies, monster movies.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot. I think Romero's Night of the Living Dead is my favorite movie of all time. You know, I know that one back to front. But in the classics, I mean, Bride of Frankenstein is probably my favorite of all of those. But I love the old Bela Lugosi Dracula and, you know, the Hammer Frankenstein and all of that stuff. I mean, James Whale Frankenstein, like just all of it is, you know, so iconic. Creature from the Black Lagoon. I rewatched that a lot when I did The Wake and all that too. So I have some of the statues in my other office, like the old Universal thing. Oh, nice. So it was the idea of wanting to create something that would feel classic and yet speak to the horrors of today. So the ghoul is something that you think is sort of just a simple monster, but it's much scarier. And it winds up, it's this ancient parasite that kind of lives among us and hides in the human host and develops like civilization leveling plagues. And when a civilization becomes too egotistical or myopic or complicated in its own way, the worshipers of the ghoul believe that it's time for it to come out of its human skin and release something that will remind us that, you know, we only survive together.
That's so scary. So,
yeah, it's a very scary design. It's this like huge, this very long, sinuous, black kind of long-faced spectral thing. And it climbs out of the host's mouth. And then it walks with its hands in front of it, with its fingers like creeping ahead of it. It's so creepy. Like they come around the door, like the fingers come around the wall before it comes around. And
that's awesome.
It's great.
I want to see it. I want to see it on Amazon Prime or whatever, a television show.
Someday. Right. Yeah.
This is our Halloween special. And to wrap up, I wanted to ask you a general question about Halloween-y things. Specifically, sure. What is your favorite Halloween or you know, Halloween pleasure, I would say, for movies?
Oh my God. I mean, Halloween is my favorite time of year by far, even more than Christmas or any of that. I've always loved horror movies since I was a little kid. Before I should have been watching them, I was watching them. And I think it's because I had a lot of anxiety and being in a space that like you know is safe and yet forces you to confront things you're afraid of and come out of it, I think was always a good way of making me less afraid. So those Halloween marathons always are like, you know, for me, like I'll watch anything on AMC from Friday the 13th, Jason in Space to, you know, the worst ones always. But the pleasure really now is like my kids are really falling in love with the idea of horror and experimenting with it a bit. Like my 14-year-old wanted to watch, he really wants to watch Scream with me. So we're going to do that tonight, actually. And he's like, oh, I want to watch all the greats like Psycho and this and that. And he's old enough now. That I feel like why not? My 10-year-old was like, Dad, maybe we can watch Goosebumps. All right. So they're starting to get into it. So that's a big joy is seeing your kids start to embrace what you love about horror, or at least horror, hoping that they'll find the same things you love in it later on.
Scream is one of the classics. I just rewatched that. I watch it every year now, and I can't believe how it holds up. Because you think of slasher and you think of like cheap, but it's just so perfectly made. Wes Craven's amazing.
I know. I made the mistake of telling the kids. My wife like went on a date or two with Skeet Ulrich when they were kids.
Oh,
like,
really? Back.
Yeah, I know. And so the kids are always like, Dad, that could be our dad. I'm like, that could not be that. You know what I mean? Like that. You would not exist.
That's hilarious. That. They have another Scream coming out with the whole cast coming back soon.
I know. It's crazy. It never stops, right? So anyway,
Do you have a favorite Halloween novel or book that you like to go back to?
Yeah, and well, Frankenstein's my favorite book of all time. My wife got me I'll show it to you, but like a beautiful, like a 1930s edition of it that I have on my thing. And I have the Bernie Wrights in, and I copied those illustrations like to no end when I was a kid. So Frankenstein hits all of my fears, you know? It's the ephemeral nature of things, how quickly it goes, the desire to pull people back from death, the hubris of that. I love that book dearly, like that. You know, I remember when I was younger, I went to the town when I was like, I went on an overseas study abroad thing, and I trekked with a buddy of mine to the place at like Chamonix in France where the glaciers were, he was supposed to be like running across.
Oh, cool.
So I love that whole mythology. That's my favorite Halloween book of all time. But my favorite straight up horror book is Pet Sematary.
Nice. That's a good one. Yeah. Very good. And then finally, what is your favorite horror comic?
Oh man, my favorite horror comic? Well, Swamp Thing is my favorite horror, the Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson. I mean, that was one of the things that made me want to write. But you know, one of the things I stumbled across when I was little, I don't know if it qualifies, the two things are Creepshow, which also, you know, Bernie Wrightson. And again, Bernie Wrightson, Cycle of the Werewolf, Cycle of the Wolf. Do you remember it was like Silver Bullet?
Yeah.
Stephen King thing, but it had the Bernie Wrightson illustrations where he's like ripping the face off the guy in the car. And the priest with the, I love that for that reason too. So I'd have to say Creepshow and the old EC horror ones, you know, just the anthologies were some of my favorites, Tomb of Dracula. But Swamp Thing was the first real consistent horror book that I loved. Arcane just freaked me out in The Unmen.
Yeah, Dark Horse is putting out, I think there's a new EC coming out this month, or it already came out. They've been doing a really good job collecting those. Well, Scott Snyder, thank you so much for being on the APT Comics podcast. Go pick up Clear, We Have Demons, and Night of the Ghoul. They're fantastic. Thanks, I love them all.
Thanks, man. It's always great to talk to you, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.